Trinadapi Sunichena Tarad Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Harinama 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 Iva Kevalam Kalao Naskeva 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 Gati Anyata Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Now we're going to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is described Nigama Kalpatura Galitang Phalam. The knowledge of the Vedas, the original knowledge of the universe, is compared to a tree. And there are very many different branches of knowledge. Those branches are divided into two divisions, material knowledge and spiritual knowledge. But of all those branches of knowledge, one book is considered the ripened fruit of that tree of knowledge of the Vedas. That book is Srimad Bhagavatam. Our host, Meenakshi Vrajarani Devi Dasi, and her husband, Kamlesh, and their two sons, Arjun and Hiran, they have requested that I speak on a particular chapter because Srimad Bhagavatam comprises 18,000 verses, 12 cantos, 335 chapters. The Bhagavatam is divided into different subject matters and different discourses. Bhagavatam is a conversation within a conversation, within a conversation, sometimes within a conversation. Tonight, we are going to hear a sampling of a conversation that took place 5,000 years ago in India. It was a conversation between the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, answering the questions of his most faithful devotee, Uddhava. Uddhava has one of the five kinds of liberation. He has a bodily form which is very similar to Krishna's bodily form. When the gopis first saw Uddhava, they thought that Krishna had come because he looked just like he did and reminded them of him. This conversation is known as the Uddhava Gita, and it happens to be at the end of Krishna's Leela, not at the end of Krishna's life, because Krishna does not die. That is one of the unique characteristics of God. God does not die. He left this world, he appeared, but he did not die. He is ever existing. He disappeared. He removed himself, just as right now, foolish people will say, oh, the sun has died. But those who are educated know the sun has not died. It has simply disappeared from our sight. Because if we were to go to India right now, midday, isn't it? It's morning or midday. The sun is shining in India. In the same way, God never dies. He appears, He disappears. He comes and goes. He's ever existing. So one of the final leelas or pastimes was this conversation between Uddhava and Krishna. If you are ready to proceed, please repeat after me. Please raise your hands and repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now joining us tonight on the internet from all over the world, we have right now 14 devotees participating for this program. So let's all say Hari Bol. They can see me and they can hear me or whatever because it is hooked up. So let's hear now this chapter that Kamlesh selected. Beyond renunciation and knowledge. These two concepts, Gyan and Vairagya, are fundamental principles of spiritual life. Unless there is renunciation or detachment from material sense gratification, and unless there is positive knowledge of the Absolute Truth, then you don't have any spiritual life. You have what is called, whimsical, sentimental. No. Real spiritual life is scientific. And these two are factors of spiritual scientific life. Renunciation or detachment from material life and positive knowledge of the Absolute Truth. We begin. What we're going to do is I'm going to read to you exactly as it is presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and when I feel necessary, I will explain it. That is the format. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy attachment for all objects of material sense gratification." So there is your first bullet point. Association with pure devotees of Krishna. There is a long, long discussion or debate, what is a pure devotee? And this question can be answered from very different angles of vision. I would give a very simple, we could say, bottom line, generic definition of a pure devotee. A definition that sometimes Srila Prabhupada also would use. If you accept that Krishna is the supreme God among all other gods, then you're a pure devotee. So if you can say that, yes, I accept that there is no God superior to Krishna, and I accept Him as such, then you can be considered a pure devotee. So these are the kinds of people that you want to associate with. Those who have this conviction that Krishna is the supreme, and there is no competitor, there is no superior, no equal. And what did Krishna say? That attachment for these pure devotees can break the attachment that we have for sense gratification, material sense gratification. Such association brings me under the control of my devotee. So this is another wonderful aspect of God. That even though He's the supreme, even though He's in the superior position, He enjoys coming under the control of someone who loves Him. this concept should enthrall you. That the great, omnipotent, almighty God enjoys being controlled by someone who loves him without any reservation. Now Krishna continues. One may perform Ashtanga Yoga or engage in the philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice nonviolence or other ordinary principles of piety, chant the Vedas, perform penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrifices, or dig wells, plant trees, or perform other public welfare activities. One may give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship demigods, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places, or accept major and minor disciplinary injunctions. But even by performing these activities, one does not bring me under control. In other words, to make it very simple, there's only one thing that attracts God's attention: love. Nothing else. No material action or qualification or attribute is able to bring God under control. We say, we understand, God is almighty, that he is infallible, unconquerable. There are different names: Achyuta, Ajita. So this unconquerable, infallible God, nothing can conquer him. If you read the 90 chapters which describes Krishna's birth and activities in Srimad Bhagavatam, you see that Krishna defeated one enemy, one adversary, one demon after another. From the time he was quote-unquote born, notice I said quote-unquote, because at the beginning I said he's not born, but he plays that role. He looks like he's taking birth, just like the sun looks like it's rising in the sky, but it's always there. So right from the time of Krishna's babyhood or appearance, different adversaries, enemies, demons came to attack and kill. But at the end, what was the score? All the demons were defeated by Krishna. Krishna remained undefeated. In the American sports world, there was one boxer. He used to brag, "I am the greatest." Now you look at him now, he can barely talk. He has become so much dilapidated from boxing. He can barely speak. So he's not the greatest anymore. But Krishna, he showed, "I am the greatest." So this greatest, nobody is going to defeat him, nobody is going to challenge him, nobody is going to conquer him. But there is one thing that will: love. That's the only thing. And that is what Krishna Consciousness Movement, Lord Chaitanya, is teaching. Learn how to love God. If you can do that, your life is a complete success. But if in this life you have not developed your dormant, I like that word, dormant love of God, then you have missed this opportunity of human life. The whole goal of human life is to develop, nurture, and kindle that dormant love of God. You're doing it right now by hearing about Krishna in the association of devotees. You are beginning to develop your dormant love of God. And therefore, elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, it says, go on hearing, go on chanting, Go on serving. Go on praying more and more and more and more. And you will see how your love of God, you'll be able to know for yourself. You'll feel it. You will be able to see, yes, I'm developing love of God. Krishna continues, in every yuga, many living entities entangled in the modes of passion and ignorance gain the association of my devotees. Thus, such living entities as daityas, rakshasas, birds, beasts, gandharvas, apsaras, nagas, siddhas, charanas, guyakas, and vidyadharas, as well as such lower class human beings as vaishyas, sudras, women, and others, were able to achieve my supreme abode. So this proves my point. Doesn't matter what your material status is. Doesn't matter. You can achieve Krishna's abode. Vitrasur, Prahlad, and others, like them, achieved my abode by association with my devotees. So the theme so far by Krishna, associate with devotees. And that is why Srila Prabhupada created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He created this society so that people would have an opportunity to associate with similar-minded like people. It's simply human nature. Businessmen want to associate with other businessmen. Hollywoodites want to associate with other Hollywoodites. And devotees naturally want to associate with other devotees. And here Krishna is reminding us, yes, this is a fundamental key principle. Personalities such as Vishvaparva, Bali, Banasura, Moya, Vibhishan, Sugriva, Hanuman, Jambavan, Gajendra, Jatayu, Tuladhar, Dharmavyada, Kubja, and the gopis in Vrindavan, and the wives of the Brahmins who were performing sacrifice, all achieved perfection by performing this association of devotees. The persons I have mentioned did not undergo studies of the Vedic literature, nor did they worship great saintly persons, nor did they execute severe vows or austerities. Simply by association with me and my devotees, they achieved me. Tonight we are doing that. We see on the altar who is there. Radha, not just Krishna. Radha Krishna. And look around you. Do you see pure devotees? I see lots of pure devotees. So, we are doing what Krishna here is recommending. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the gopis, the cows, and non-moving creatures, such as the twin Arjuna trees, and animals, living entities with stunted consciousness, such as bushes and thick thickets, and snakes such as Kaliya, all achieve the perfection of life by unalloyed love for me, and thus very easily achieve me. These principles that Krishna is mentioning to Uddhava is also there in the Bhagavad Gita. As I was preparing for this class earlier this week, I was noticing how there are so many verses in Bhagavad Gita that are exactly the same concept, which teaches us that everything that Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching is also based on the core teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So, everyone should learn Bhagavad Gita. Everyone should read Bhagavad Gita. And with a solid foundation of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, progress to Srimad Bhagavatam and expand your knowledge and detachment. And by doing so, you will develop your dormant love for Krishna. Krishna continues, even though one engages with great endeavor in mystic yoga or philosophical speculation, charity, vows, penances, ritualistic sacrifices, teaching of Vedic mantras, personal study of the Vedas, or the renounced order of life, still one cannot achieve me. The residents of Vrindavan, headed by the gopis, were always completely attached to me with deepest love. Therefore, when my uncle Akrura brought my brother Balaram and me to the city of Mathura, the residents of Vrindavan suffered extreme mental distress because of separation from me and could not find any other source of happiness. This is, here Krishna is showing who are the topmost lovers of Krishna. In the subject matter of lovers of Krishna, there are different levels and grades of deep attachment and love. So these residents of Vrindavan, headed by the gopis, they have the deepest, most profound love. Uddhava already learned that. In a previous episode, many years before this Uddhava Gita, Krishna had sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to deliver a message. And for 2 months, Uddhava was able to study very minutely the character of the gopis. And after 2 months, when Uddhava was about to return home, back to Krishna and report his findings, Uddhava said, these residents of Vrindavan, these gopis, are so exalted that in my next birth, I want to be a bush or a blade of grass or something right outside of Vrindavan, so that when the gopis walk, the dust of their feet will go on my head. That is what Uddhava wanted to be his next birth, because he got to appreciate how great the love of the gopis is. And that teaches us yet another principle. Someone who is actually a devotee always can recognize someone is more advanced than themselves. Somebody who is a materialistic or neophyte devotee thinks, I'm the best. These people are all fools and rascals. Go away. I'm right there with Krishna. So when someone thinks that they're the best, actually, they're the lowest. And somebody who is actually very, very exalted thinks everybody else is more advanced in love of Krishna. The great Acharya in our line, Madhavendra Puri, on his deathbed, he was crying that he could not achieve Mathura. He could not achieve pure love for Krishna. He was feeling separation. So the mark is, as Lord Chaitanya teaches us, the mark is always, always, always remain meek and humble. Tolerate all the different inconveniences. Continue to offer respects to others. Don't be concerned with respect from others, but make sure you give respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can easily always chant the holy name. And as Krishnadas Kaviraj says, this chanting of Krishna's holy name is the way to achieve love of God. Let's all chant one time. Dear Uddhava, all those nights that the gopis spent with me, their most dearly beloved, in the land of Vrindavan, seemed to them to pass in less than a moment. Bereft of my association, however, the gopis felt that those same nights dragged on forever, as if each night were equal to a day of Brahma. And this teaches us even a basic concept of life. When you're enjoying, the time flies. You've had that experience with children. You've gone to the beach or Disneyland. You've been there all day. And you tell your children, time to go home. What? We just got here. I've had that experience so many times. You look at your watch, it's 11 o'clock at night. It's time to go home. Oh no, we just got... You've been here since 8 o'clock. Now, the same psychology is reversed. When you're in extreme pain, time goes very slow. When I had my kidney stone, my first kidney stone, it was like this. Each moment felt like 12 years or more. I had to wait so long to see the doctor in the emergency room. But each second was, oh, Krishna, Krishna. So same thing with the gopis. When they were dancing with Krishna and they spent their time with Krishna, the night, the time flew. But when Krishna disappeared and did not return, it seemed, like it says here, each night was equal to a day of Brahma. My dear Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization, like rivers merging into the ocean, and are thus unaware of material names and forms, similarly the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds that they could not think of their own bodies or of this world or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. This is why Lord Chaitanya teaches, who are the greatest yogis? How do we judge a yogi? A yogi is someone who can enter into samadhi. Here is practical spiritual samadhi. The gopis had no other thought than thinking of Krishna. No matter what they were doing their household chores, milking cows, taking care of family members, whatever they were doing, but they were simply thinking of Krishna only. It is impossible for Srimati Radharani to forget Krishna. It's impossible. And she is the greatest of the gopis. She cannot but think of Krishna. Even she once said, even if I try to stop thinking of Krishna, I can't do it. That's samadhi. Even if she wants to forget, she can't. All those hundreds and thousands of gopis, understanding me to be their most charming lover and ardently desiring me in that way, were unaware of my actual position. In other words, the gopis do not think of Krishna as most people would. He is the Supreme Lord. He is the all. No. They only know that Krishna is their dearmost lovable object. As Prabhupada once spoke, you all know that song, Jai Radha Madhav Kunja Bihari. So one time Prabhupada was explaining that, and Prabhupada was explaining that the residents of Vrindavan do not care whether Krishna is God. They don't care. Krishna may be God or some demigod, doesn't matter. All they know is they love that Krishna. One time, this Uddhava was speaking to Krishna's father, Nanda. And Uddhava was explaining to Nanda, actually, you know, your son is on the level of Narayan. And Nanda Maharaj said, whatever you say. He's my son, and I have to instruct him. That's all I know. The residents of Vrindavan are like that. They don't care about anything other than whatever Krishna may be, all we know is we love him. By intimately associating with me, the gopis attained me, the supreme, absolute truth. So now Krishna is ending this particular section and he's giving his final conclusion of this particular section. Therefore, so when someone says therefore, he's coming to the conclusion. My dear Uddhava, abandon the Vedic mantras as well as the procedures of supplementary Vedic literatures and their positive and negative injunctions. Disregard that which has been heard and that which is to be heard. Same thing we hear in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The transcendentalist becomes indifferent. Same thing. What is to be heard and what has been heard. And what does Krishna say? So Krishna just said, don't worry about all these things. Simply take shelter of me alone. What's that same statement in Bhagavad Gita, Kamlesh? Your birth? That is your verse. And I pray that in 100 years from now, when you're on your deathbed, that is the last thing that comes out of your... What do you think? Is that a good blessing? I bless you that that's the last thing you say when you give up the air of life. Sarvadharman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja ang tvang sarva papebhyo mokshayami ma suchaha. Do not hesitate, ma suchaha. Do not worry, ma suchaha. Do not fear, ma suchaha. Just surrender. And Krishna saying this, I told you. Bhagavad Gita, and after all, who spoke Bhagavad Gita? Krishna. Who's speaking Uddhava Gita? Same Krishna, not a different Krishna. So he's not going to contradict himself. He's saying the same thing. Surrender to me. And yet, you will find that person, now you don't have to surrender to Krishna. And Krishna says, take shelter of me alone, for I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, situated within the heart of all conditioned souls. There are at least 5 times in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is stated to be situated in the heart. 5 times. Take shelter of me wholeheartedly. The line in Bhagavad Gita verse he quoted, Mam Ekam. Same thing. Mamic, exclusive. Exclusive devotion. And by my grace, be free from fear in all circumstances. So this verse, spoken to Uddhava, is Bhagavad Gita 1866, paraphrased. If you want to hear more, then chant the Maha Mantra. So we have 21 devotees online from around the world. Mayapur TV has 162. But we're in second place. Not bad. All right. Let us continue. Sri Uddhava said, O Lord of all masters of mystic power, I have heard your words, but doubt in my heart does not go away. Thus my mind is bewildered. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, when Lord Kapila is instructing his mother, he goes through the 24 elements of this material world. And when he gets to the subtle elements, mind, intelligence, false ego, and contaminated consciousness, these are the 4 subtle material elements, Kapila Dev describes the symptoms and characteristics. And when he comes to intelligence, doubt is listed as one of the signs of someone being intelligent. Now, it's not that one should remain doubtful forever, but if somebody has a doubt, that shows they have some intelligence. If there's no doubt, then just one will accept anything anybody says. The sky is blue. Okay. The sky is red. Okay. No. Doubt is a sign that someone has some intelligence. But as we learn from Bhagavad Gita, doubts can also be compared to demons. And what should you do with demons? What should you do with doubts? And you'll see in Bhagavad Gita, how do you slay the demon of doubt? With the weapon of knowledge. And where do you get knowledge? Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, your spiritual master, or other exalted devotees can also clear up your doubts. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, the Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated within the heart along with the life air and the primal sound vibration. The Lord can be perceived in His subtle form within the heart by one's mind, since the Lord controls the minds of everyone." We learn from Bhagavad Gita, that verse in chapter 15, Sarvasya Chaham Riddhi Sannivishta, right? Krishna says, "I am situated in the heart." But then he says, Matak Smritir Gyanam Apovanam Cha. But from me, Krishna says, comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So this is what Krishna is saying. He controls the mind. Yes. If you're trying to remember something and Krishna says, you're not going to remember. But when Krishna is pleased, He lets you know, this is where you put your car keys. They're in your pocket. So Krishna says, from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So therefore the devotee, no matter what situation, is always taking shelter of Krishna. Even great demigods like Lord Shiva, Krishna controls his mind also. The Supreme Lord also assumes a gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations. When sticks of kindling wood are vigorously rubbed together, heat is produced by contact with air, and a spark of fire appears. Once the fire is kindled, ghee is added and the fire blazes. Similarly, I become manifest in the sound vibration of the Vedas. So, you will see in Bhagavad Gita at the end, Krishna says that if you read Bhagavad Gita, you worship Krishna by your intelligence. Also, in chapter 17, the austerities of the mind, one of them, see the austerity of the mind or austerity of speech, one should recite the Vedas regularly. So here Krishna is saying, I become manifest in that sound vibration. And I have practical experience of this. This week, I spent 2 days with the Garmalkar family. Are they here? Alright, so the Garmalkar family, Sri Vallabh's mother passed away. So he asked me to come and recite Bhagavad Gita. So we did it on 2 days. We recited every Sanskrit sloka and every translation. We did on the first day the first 9 chapters. Then on the second day we did the second 9 chapters. And how did we do? Was Krishna manifest by that sound vibration? I think so. If you do it, you'll see. Every year in the ISKCON temple, I recite the Bhagavad Gita Yajna. Kamlesh is there, some of you were there. And we do the whole Bhagavad Gita one sitting, all 700 shlokas. And at the end, Haribo! You feel as if you're reborn. It is an amazing experience. In the beginning it's rough, and you don't think, you're looking and it's only chapter 2, we got 18 chapters to go, and it's cold. Taha! But when you get to chapter 18, verse 78, thus ends the Bhagavad Gita, you feel a completely different, you feel rejuvenated. The functions of the working senses, the organ of speech, the hands, the legs, the genital, and the anus, and the functions of the knowledge acquiring senses, nose, tongue, eyes, skin, and ears, along with the functions of the subtle senses of mind, intelligence, consciousness, and false ego, as well as the function of the subtle pradhan and the interaction of the three modes of material nature. All these should be understood as my materially manifest form. The concept here is that you learn in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. How many of you know that line from Bhagavad Gita? Yes, one of the big lines. Krishna is saying, I am everything. The meaning of that is like here. Everything is simply Krishna's energy. And the devotee sees it like that. Just like you've all been invited to Kamlesh's house. But none of you can say, oh, I think I'll take that painting. I think, no. You know everything in this house belongs to Kamlesh. It's his property. So similarly, for the devotee thinks, America, this, that. No. Everything belongs to Krishna. The devotee, like here we have, here's my tape recorder. As all things nowadays say, made in China. Right? But for a devotee, made by Krishna. The devotee understands China, the moon, everything is Krishna's property. And this way, a devotee is always in Krishna consciousness. Tomorrow, if you come to Laguna Beach Temple, the subject matter Kamlesh has requested I speak on is called the first step of God realization. So that first step of God realization is like that. That everything I see simply is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Doesn't belong to me, doesn't belong to you, everything belongs to Krishna. Confirmed by the child. Krishna continues, when many seeds are placed in an agricultural field, innumerable manifestations of trees, bushes, vegetables, and so on will arise from a single source, the soil. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives life to all and is eternal, originally exists beyond the scope of the cosmic manifestation. In the course of time, however, the Lord, who is the resting place of the three modes, and the source of the universal lotus flower, in which the cosmic manifestation takes place, divides his material potencies, and thus appears to be manifest in innumerable forms, although he is one. This reminds me of another important point or fundamental principle, that Krishna, God, is existing at that time when there is no manifest material world. That has to be understood. That according to the Vedas, at some point all this material manifestation will be dissolved. Now when all of this material manifestation is dissolved, Krishna and his spiritual world is ever existing. So that has to be understood why. Because many people misunderstand and they think, oh, Krishna just appeared recently and Ram appeared before Krishna, and they come up with so many different things. No. Krishna is always existing in the spiritual world even before the material world is manifest. He is eternally existing in his abode. And it just so happens that every once in a while he appears. But before he appears, he was already existing. I gave the same example, the sun. The sun is always there in the sky. But sometimes the sun is manifest to us, sometimes not. Similarly, Krishna is always in his transcendental abode. And sometimes he appears in this material world, sometimes he is not. Just as a woven cloth rests on the expansion of lengthwise and crosswise threads, similarly, the entire universe is expanded on the lengthwise and crosswise potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is situated within Him. The conditioned soul has been accepting material bodies since time immemorial. Let that one sink. This is not your first circus. This is not your first rodeo. Look at this. The conditioned soul has been accepting material bodies since time immemorial. You've been here for a while. And these bodies are like great trees sustaining one's material existence. And just as a tree first blossoms and then produces fruit, similarly the tree of material existence, namely one's material body, produces the various results of material existence. This tree of material existence has two seeds, hundreds of roots, three lower trunks, and five upper trunks. It produces five flavors and has 11 branches and a nest made of two birds. The tree is covered by three types of bark. It gives two fruits and extends up to the sun. So those two birds that Krishna is mentioning is explained elsewhere in the Uddhava Gita, and it's also mentioned in the Upanishads. The two birds are you, the soul, the real you, and your good friend Krishna, who dwells in your heart. And the same thing that the Upanishad verse says, Krishna also says in Uddhava Gita. One bird is flying from branch to branch, trying to taste the fruits. And it said here, two fruits. So there's only two fruits on the tree of the body. Happiness, distress. That's it. Two flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, that's it. Happiness and distress, that's all you get, folks. Now the other bird, representing super soul, he is not flying from branch to branch. Why? He is Atmaram, self-satisfied. He doesn't need to go from branch to branch tasting happiness and distress. And that super soul bird is waiting for his friend to turn to him, surrender, and learn how to become Atmaram. And that's why, another point, at this stage, we cannot visualize the super soul. So the super soul manifests himself as your spiritual master. So when you have your spiritual master, take from him that what he is speaking is the same as that super soul in the heart would speak to you. Arjuna, if Krishna was to come to you right now and say, I want you to do this, do this, do this, what would you say? Excellent. Let's give him a hand. Very good. So when you meet your bona fide spiritual master, you should have that same consciousness, that whatever my spiritual master is saying, We sing a song every day. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitte Te Kariya Aikya Arna Kariya Manayash. I only want to hear the words emanating from the lotus mouth of my spiritual master. Let me make that one within my heart. I have many friends here, and they have told me over the years how they also made that connection. And when they made that connection and they took the words of their spiritual master seriously, their lives were changed forever. I have heard from many of you over the years that same conviction. Swan-like men in the renounced order of life enjoy the other fruit, whereas those lusty after material enjoyment and dedicated to family life enjoy the other fruit. One who, with the help of bona fide spiritual masters who can understand this tree to be a manifestation of the potency of the one supreme truth appearing in many forms, actually knows the meaning of the Vedic literature. With steady intelligence, the final verse of the chapter, we did it, Kamlesh. Right on time. I'm going to give myself a bell. With steady okay, so here's the final conclusion. So let's pick up this last statement. With steady intelligence, you should develop unalloyed devotional service. Same thing mentioned in chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita. Mang chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatit yaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Arjuna asks Krishna, how do I transcend the modes of nature? And so when Krishna is explaining how to transcend the modes of nature, he says, by unalloyed devotional service without any interruption. So here Krishna is saying, with steady intelligence, you should develop unalloyed devotional service. How? By careful worship of the spiritual master. I'll repeat that. You should develop unalloyed devotional service by careful worship of the spiritual master. So that gives us insight. Why does Prabhupada, why is the first prayer every morning, Vande Guru Sri Charanaravinda. Then at 7 o'clock, what's the first prayer? Sri Guru Charanapadma. Prabhupada is not concocting anything. Prabhupada, what he has given in his movement is exactly the absolute truth, spiritual science. Here Krishna is saying, you should develop unalloyed devotional service by careful worship of the spiritual master. And with the sharpened axe of transcendental knowledge, you should cut off the subtle material covering of the soul. Upon realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you should then give up that axe of analytical knowledge. In other words, it's a means to an end. Your knowledge should end in bhakti. Therefore, we're not just Vedantists. We are bhakti Vedantists. And therefore, we end, as I end all of my classes. Raise your hands. Repeat after me. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. So, Kamlesh, you have some presentation you want to do?